It's Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to a professional who would never forget a name.
So, I wish your son Miller all the best.
My name is Noah!
Why? Because his voice is so velvety smooth.
Yo, Manella, kick it one time, boy.
It makes the girls go...
Oh, my.
He's a rapper so fly.
Philadelphia, born and raised. On the playground is where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, laxing, relaxing, or cooling, or shooting some b-ball outside of the school when a couple of guys, they were up to no good, started making trouble in my neighborhood. I got one little fight. My mom got scared. She said, you're moving with your auntie and uncle in Bel Air. I whistled for a cab, and when it came near, my license plate depressed. It had a dice in the mirror. If anything, I would say that this cab was rare, but I thought, nah, forget it. Yo, Holmes, the Bel Air.
He makes Eminem want to cry. It's the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Hay.
Sportos and motorheads, geeks, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Right now on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Millen Beloit or call them at 738-5701.
Yes, it's one of the favorite times of the week for us. It's a Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney. Brian, how you doing, my man?
Doing great, Wade. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
I'm doing great. You noticed that we snuck in that Fresh Prince rap. You knew that was coming, right?
Absolutely, man. That's good stuff. Thank you.
You are welcome. Hey, well, a little bit has happened since we last spoke with you. And that is KU making history with their 14th straight conference championship. I remember before the year, you and I both predicted KU would go 14-4. That didn't look too solid when they were 8-4. But now, here we are. They're 13-4. They win at Oklahoma State this weekend. And there we have it, 14-4, and win the league title outright.
Just like we predicted, right?
Yeah.
And neither of us ever wavered.
No.
Never. Solid in our confidence and prediction. I think you and I both were confident they would find a way to win the league. If we were being honest, after the loss in Waco, it was probably going to be daunting to get to 14-4. Although, I remember talking to you about the possibility of running the table and feeling like if any team could, it was this one. But
yep.
To see the way they played, even in a Texas game where they didn't play that great, but it was never really in doubt, I think part of that is just their heads were, you know, thinking about senior night. It was a game without Mo Bamba, and they knew that it was going to take a lot for Texas to truly get over that hump and come back and beat him. And so subconsciously, I think you rest on your laurels a little bit as opposed to a game where it's West Virginia or it's Texas Tech and, you know, you've got to give 110%. But so to me, even though Bill Self would say that was not a great performance on Monday, I think momentum was sustained and you got a 5-game winning streak right now, chance to make it 6 heading into tournament week where you're playing arguably your best ball of the year and obviously have put yourself in rarefied air to have a chance at an 8th-1 seed in the last 12 years, which is just simply remarkable. You could still screw that up, obviously, but if they win this one on Saturday and play till Saturday in Kansas City, I think they're 1, regardless of what happens in that Big 12 title game. And to me, that is just unbelievable, considering everything this team has been through this year, from losing a 5-star recruit that was a top 10 overall player, that you really were going to be leaning on as a starter for all 35 games, having a cloud hang over the program for about 2.5 months while we waited and wondered and debated his status, had to break in a new player in the middle of the year who reclassified to be a part of this team this year, had to pull a tight end off the football team, had to go through some peaks and valleys and a lot of valleys with a couple of your starters there. Bill Self was still pushing buttons and making motivational ploys in February, which never happens. And ultimately, here they sit with the same results when it's all said and done. If that doesn't speak to a Hall of Fame coach having one of his best coaching jobs, I don't know what does. Because for all of those things to be different in a negative way, working against you, and yet the results ultimately to be the same, yeah, there's 4 more regular season losses this year than last year. But at the end of the day, they won the Big 12, still a week to go, and they're a 1 seed. That, to me, is just incredible.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and this might be Bill Self's best coaching job of the 14 years winning a conference championship, and there's no question they couldn't have done it without their top 2 seniors. And, you know, Devontae Graham, tons of talk about him being Big 12 Player of the Year versus Trey Young. We can get into that here in a moment. I know you stumped for him last week and totally made some great points, and then he did what he did the last couple of games. But and I know it's been talked about, but certainly he doesn't get as much attention, and that is Svi Mykhailiuk. And, you know, he has improved so much from last year to this year. I mean, he's not hesitant. He's more aggressive. He's able to drive it right or left. He just seems more comfortable. I mean, we know that the KU would not have won a conference title this year without Devontae Graham, but they certainly wouldn't have won it either without Svi Mykhailiuk.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, if you would have said back in spring of 2017 when he elected to come back, what would the ideal senior season look like for Svi? Realistically, I think you couldn't have drawn it up much better than this, because it's not like he was going to come back and be the guy on this team. He was always going to be a complimentary piece. And quite honestly, based on everything we had seen in practice last year and heard from Bill Self and others, I probably would have thought he'd be the third option on this team, maybe fourth after Billy Preston. I thought it would be Devontae, then Malik, then Billy, then Svi. But obviously, Billy never played. Malik has been really good in stretches, but was never the 1A, 1B partner with Devontae Graham that we thought he could be. And it's been Svi, you know, and he did have a little bit of a swoon for about 2 weeks in there due to some bizarre stuff a couple of weeks back. But you might recall before that, he'd had three straight games of 20-plus points, and over a two-week stretch looked like one of the best players in the entire league, like a first-team All-Big 12 guy. And he's since, you know, rallied to get back into that 16, 17-point-per-game type swing here over the last week. And I don't think that anybody could have asked for much more going back to last May when he first decided to come back, because this was a guy that was always a great set shooter, had terrific mechanics and unbelievable confidence in shooting the ball. And he worked last year hard on the in-between game, driving it, pulling up to the mid-range, all that. But he plays with such assertiveness. You think back to that game in Lubbock on Saturday.
Yeah.
Remember that spin move he made?
Yeah.
Where, I mean, he looked like he was Frank Mason or something with the body control and the explosive spinning burst. This is a 6'8 guy doing that, and a guy that would not have been that confident or assertive a year ago. And so I think he's shown scouts a lot in terms of development and maturity. And keep in mind, he's still just 20 years old. So really exciting to see what his ultimate ceiling could be. If he can improve this much in the last 10 months, you know, just imagine what the ultimate trajectory is for him. He could have a really solid pro career in front of him. So excited for him. So happy it worked out the way it did, and hopeful that he's still got 10 games to go to show us even more progress.
Devontae Graham, I run out of superlatives to boast upon him. The game on Saturday against Texas Tech, and he did it late in the game early in the year at Fort Worth against TCU, where, to me, he willed his team to victory. And he did it from the very beginning of the game against Texas Tech. He made every shot that KU needed. He made every play. And you know my son Miller. I was trying to use an example for him. And I said to him, Brian, I said, listen, you know, my son whines about being one of the shortest kids or the shortest kid on his team. He's short. He's vertically challenged. But he's a good ball handler. He shoots the ball pretty well. And I told him, I said, notice what Devontae Graham just did today in Lubbock. I said he dominated the game in essence. He was the shortest guy on the floor, but not only did he score the points and make the shots, he also protected the basketball. He was a leader on the floor, encouraging his teammates or telling them where they needed to go. And there was a play late in that game when the ball was loosened on the floor, and guess who dove on the floor to try to get it? And eventually KU got the ball out of the scrum. That was Devontae Graham. And I told him, you don't have to be 7 feet to dominate a basketball game. You can be like Devontae Graham. And I told my son, you're probably not going to be Devontae Graham, even though if you want to be, that's fine. But it was a great teaching moment for me to tell him, listen, you don't have to be the biggest kid. You don't have to be the strongest kid. You don't have to be the fastest kid. But if you put the whole package together, you can dominate a game like Devontae Graham did the other day.
No, I think that's well said. And that's what is, I think in my eyes, his open and shut case for Big 12 Player of the Year. He has put everything together. He has given this team everything they could possibly need or want from him and redefined himself in the process. His fantastic first three seasons were largely as a complimentary guard who got open looks based on Frank Mason's dribble penetration, the penetrate pitch, the kick out that has Devontae on the wing with his feet set, his shoulders square, and he's throwing in threes with that nickname, the baby-faced assassin. Well, suddenly Frank's gone, and he's got to get his own shot. He's got to learn how to finish driving the ball at the cup and getting to the line 10 or 11 times a game. He's got to figure out how to hit shots off balance and contested, because suddenly he's the catalyst, he's the instigator, he's the initiator. And now he has to do all of that while still maintaining the role of picking up the opposing guards, you know, whoever the top scorer is on the perimeter for the other team. He has done it impressively and incredibly, quite frankly, when you look at the career totals. Only Darnell Valentine and Kirk Heinrich are in his class when it comes to career points, assists, and steals, and is the only guy in the country right now averaging what he does with fewer than three turnovers a game. He has absolutely cemented himself as a top 10 player nationally, which means he'll be at least a second team All-American pick. I think he's a Big 12 Player of the Year from the coaches, and I hope from the media as well. And I think if he gets both of those, his name goes in the rafters. You know, we've got some number fours up there that are pretty dang impressive with Sharon and Nick Collison. I think we're about to see another number four go up, and what a great number four it will be. To me, Saturday was the clincher, not just for Big 12 Player of the Year, but for his status in Kansas history.
Yep.
Without that game, he's a really good player.
Yep.
And has a lot of really gaudy cumulative statistics, but so do a lot of guys that don't have their numbers in the rafters. I mean, Keith Langford isn't up there, and he's a top 10 career scorer. Aaron Miles isn't up there yet, and he's a career assist leader. But Saturday cemented the league race for Player of the Year, the league race for 14 straight, and his Hall of Fame case, because it was on such a huge stage. ESPN College Game Day, number 8 at number 6. Jay Billis is calling the game. Dan Shulman's calling the game. The whole world's watching, and he just takes over. And you know, you talk about the Heisman Trophy in the fall. You know, what do these guys do in November? What do they do in the big showcase games late in the schedule when everybody is expecting them to either come through or falter? What will they do when the lights are the brightest and all of that? Well, this was Devontae's Heisman moment. Now, I don't know that he's going to win the Wooden or the Naismith like Frank did, but if he had any chance to be the first-team All-American, Saturday was the springboard game. And it did catapult him into the top 10 for the Wooden and Naismith this past couple of days. And so to me, you know, that cements right there that he's going to be at least a second-team All-American. I think he's a Jersey enshrinee here in 5 years, and I think he goes down as one of the most popular, if not the very most popular, Bill Self-era player. Mario had the miracle, yes. And Sharon Collins, you know, was about as good of a winner as Bill Self ever coached. We love Wayne Simien for the ambassador he is, and that was a Roy guy initially and Bill Self guy for the last two. But Coach Self would tell you, in terms of just overall popularity, the way Devontae is on campus, truly BMOC. He makes everybody feel special, whether you're the guy that's refilling the Gatorade cooler or you're the assistant coach on the basketball team, whether you're the guy mopping the floors or you're the chancellor, Doug Girard. He makes you feel like $1 million. And that charismatic personality and million-dollar smile on top of everything he's given this team has made him, according to Bill Self, the most popular guy he's ever coached in his 15 years here. And I think that'll be part of his legend and his legacy. But just imagine, as popular as he is right now, just think about his place in history. They could find a way to win 6 games in March and possibly cut down that to San Antonio. Then he truly would have no equal, decided Danny Manning.
And based on how he had to do it, playing virtually every single second of the Big 12 conference slate is flat out amazing. And I agree with everything that you said. And I agree too that for me, after his performance on Saturday, I was like, that's your Big 12 Player of the Year. I mean, that's what it's about. Big time players come up in big time moments. And, you know, this team, like you said, seemed a little bit daunting at 8-4 after a loss to Baylor, and all they've done since then, led by Graham, is win 5 in a row and clinch the outright championship. And so now they have a game coming up on Saturday against Oklahoma State. I think most people are aware of the numbers that Bill Self has never been swept during a regular season series against Big 12 opponents. And the question I was going to ask you originally is, what's KU's motivation? Because they have the Big 12 wrapped up. They have an outright title. They had senior night, and they had their speeches, and they shed their tears. But there is that number one seed out there that you referred to a little bit ago. The question I have for you is, how important is the number one seed? And I ask this because, as we know, Kansas as a one seed, I think the last seven times, Bill Self's been a one seed. KU's only made the Final Four one time. The other time they made the Final Four under Self, they were a two seed, went to the national championship game and lost to Kentucky and New Orleans. Granted, you would rather play a 16 seed than a 15 seed in the first round, but what other benefits are there out there that you can tell listeners about getting the one seed versus settling for a two?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, there's not a huge difference. It all depends on if you're a one, who's your two, and if you're a two, who's your one.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I'd rather be a two and have Xavier be my one than be a one and have Duke be my two. Does that make sense?
Yes, I totally agree with that.
And so, to me, as the play-by-play guy, I love being able to boast eight ones in a 12-year span, and you talked about the regular season dominance and all that, but that also puts pressure on, well, how come there haven't been more Final Fours in that stretch? There's certainly a lot of glitz and glam that you can print on a postcard and send to a recruit when you talk about going to the tournament as a one seed for so many consecutive years. That's great. But at the end of the day, what we're going to remember 5, 10, 50 years from now is, did they cut down nets? Did they make a Final Four? And if being a two in a region with a weaker one is better than being the presumed weakest one with the strongest two, then obviously in a tournament format that's all about matchups, maybe you don't mind being a two at that point. I'm not going to sit here and speak for Coach Self on what I think he wants and that sort of thing, but I'll tell you, I don't want any part of Duke in the tournament. I think they could be as talented as any team going, and they've obviously had their ups and downs as well. That's why they're on the two line right now and not the one. But that's a team that could figure it all out over a six-game stretch with a perfect blend of one-and-done five-star talent and then seasoned veteran talent as well. And that's something we thought Kansas was going to have this year. It turned out they don't have any one-and-done talent since Billy Preston never played, but they do have a great blend of veteran and then second, third-year type guys as well. So, to me, how many other advantages are there? Well, obviously, you know, the way they snake it, you know, if you're a one, they're going to match you up with a two. But like I said, I think there's a team on the two line more potent than a team on the one line right now, Duke over Xavier. So we'll see what shakes out in the next 10 days and how this thing, you know, takes shape coming into Selection Sunday. But I, for one, am not afraid to line up as a two in Xavier's region. I'd not be afraid to go to L.A. as a one. I just hope they wouldn't ship Duke all the way across the country to L.A. as our two. You give me a different two as a one in L.A., and I'll take it, because I think this team has played its best ball away from home, and that's not to say that all the extra fans that would be in Omaha should you make the Sweet 16 would be a hindrance. They're a blessing, don't get me wrong, but there's something about this road dog, road warrior mentality that's made this team play at its best. Obviously, they lost in Waco, and Polka Doke happened in Norman. But otherwise, they've been most dialed in when they've kind of been out on an island. And so I have no problem with being the one out west if that's the case. I just don't want any part of the Blue Devils as our two seed if that's going to be the case as well.
And just take it a step further, if you're sitting there going, well, is a two, if you win your first game, then you face a seven possibly. As a one, you face a eight. And then beyond that, you get to the Sweet 16. As a two, you might face a three. As a one, you'd face a four. I've been watching a lot of basketball this year, Brian, and I've been watching Big 12. I've watched Pac-12 late at night. I've watched SEC, the Big 10. We were going through this whole bubble situation where everybody's talking about the Big 12 might get seven or eight teams in, and I'm sitting here going, what makes these three or four teams on the bubble in the Big 12 any better than these three or four teams in the SEC on the bubble or the Big 10 or the Pac-12? They all have very similar resumes. I think you could flip a coin with a lot of them, and some of these teams are going to be on that 7, 8, 9, 10 line. And then, of course, the threes and the fours. I don't think there's a big difference between threes and fours this year. Thus, I don't think the difference between one and two is that significant, like you said, unless you get the wrong two in your region or the wrong one in your region. It's all about matchups, and that's what it comes down to every single year, doesn't it?
It does, no doubt. And I've said this, you know, for the last week or so, and I'll stand by it. When the selection brackets come out here in 10 days, 9 days, I guess, look at your top four seeds in each region. Those are your top 16 teams in the country. Write them down, highlight them, whatever, and then say goodbye to them, because by the time the second week of the tournament begins, I think that they will be a massacre in which eight of them are done already.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way this college basketball landscape has unfolded this year. 2 weeks ago, we had a fortnight in which there were 11 teams in a two-week span that were top 10 teams that all took at least one, in some cases two losses. Back-to-back weeks in which five and six teams ranked in the top 10 lost. It's, yes, a year where everybody's a little bit vulnerable at the top and nobody's truly elite, but it's also a year where the middle and the back is as strong as it's ever been. And so I think you're going to see Kansas, should they advance to the second weekend, look around and to their right and to their left and say, wait a minute, there aren't as many ones and twos as I thought there would be right now. And where are the threes and fours? By the time you get to the Elite Eight, you might have two twos. You might have two ones, a two, a four, and that's it. And I realize a lot of years you have chaos going on, but I think this year more so than any, it's going to be tough for the higher seeds to survive in advance. And so I think you're splitting hairs on, you know, a one versus a four as opposed to a two versus a three. They're all going to be tough, and the possibility exists that neither will be there by the time you get to the Sweet 16 either,
right?
Because that's the type of year I think it could be.
Yeah, the voice of Jess Brown Haney with us, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. All right, time for an off-the-wall question, Brian. And KU on senior night wore the red uniforms. Devontae Graham really wanted to wear those, and he caught Bill Self at a good moment, I think, when he was warm and fuzzy after clinching the Big 12 title, share of that after the game down in Lubbock. So KU wore the red jerseys. I cringe when I see those red jerseys because I'm old enough to remember 1986 and how that went awry. The rumor is Larry Brown burned those jerseys after that game. So my question to you is, what color do you look best in, or what's your favorite color to wear, Brian Haney?
Well, right now it's black because I think I've put on about 7 or 8 pounds in basketball season. My 37-year-old metabolism has made me the personification of that song, I Ain't As Good As I Once Was.
Yes.
But that's what the off season's for, so I'm going to try and get back into to beach body shape by May. But, man, I'd say black right now. Normally it's actually red. That's my favorite color. I don't wear it because Tiger Woods wears it on Sundays, but it is power, passion, and love. I love red, so I was a fan of the red unis the other night. And fitting that, since that was Devontae's wish, that he got to wear them on his senior night. And plenty of cool photos came out of that night, so I think it was a good call. One of 11 different uniform combinations the team had to use this year.
11? I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of different uniforms. And who pays for those uniforms?
Adidas.
Okay. Well,
we have that great contract, so they give us all kinds of flexibility. We're not quite Oregon football, but we do have some options.
Well, I want to be able to see the numbers on the back of the jersey, so let's stay away from the Oregon football thing, would we please? All right, man. Oklahoma State coming up on Saturday, and then we'll look ahead to the Big 12 tournament next Thursday with you. Brian, always a pleasure. Thanks for the time. Safe travels to Stillwater.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, we'll be in the Big 12 tournament at that point.
That's so
we'll
right.
figure that out. That'll be a game day. We'll make something happen next week for sure. And hopefully it's a much longer stay in Kansas City.
Sounds good. Take care, Brian.
See you, bud.
That's the voice of JX, Brian Haney, brought to you, as always, by Anderson Insurance Agency, to farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.